Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next-door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass, and good morning to you, Adam Bandt.
Good morning. How are you going?
Great to have you back on the airwaves. It's been so long that we've almost forgotten your voice.
Thank you for having me. I love to get an invite. Thank you.
Look, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, look, I'm going to kick off the conversation.
No, I've got a little message here from someone that you may or may not have known at Slater's, Adam, Michael Magazanik.
Yes.
And he's listening in.
Hi, Michael.
And he says, say hello to Adam. There you go.
A hello back.
There you go. Tass.
He rudely interrupted me.
I know.
Adam, look, my just to kick off the conversation, what's it like being leader? How do you feel about being the leader of the Greens Party?
I feel pretty lucky. It's a real privilege to walk in, you know, the footsteps of people like, you know, Bob Brown was really sort of one of my political heroes, and to think I'm now occupying the role he did is, it feels pretty humbling and feels a real honour. It's been an interesting time to take over the leadership. We're just sort of getting ourselves in order, and all of a sudden coronavirus hitting through. I think no one expected 2020 to work out the way that it has so far, and spent a lot more time on Zoom meetings than I expected. And I think probably you're on mute has probably become the most uttered phrase in the English language over the last couple of months. And I've heard it lots of times, but... Yeah, we're at a time when there's a lot of challenges. We've got inequality crisis, we've got the climate crisis, now we've got the economic crisis from Corona, and I feel like we've got the answers to deal with those at the moment. So it feels good to be at the helm.
I know it's very early days. No, but I know you've only been in the role for 5 minutes. But what would you nominate as being your proudest achievement so far in the role?
I think when I took over the leadership, I was keen for it to not be about personalities, but for it to be about ideas and about policies. And we came out of the gates at the first press conference calling for a Green New Deal, a government-led project of dealing with the various crises that we're facing all at once, so that we don't just sort of get the economy back on track, but that we deal with the climate crisis and deal with things like the homelessness crisis and so on as well. And it feels like there's been a bit of an understanding that we are about those transformative ideas that are going to deal with the multiple crises that we're facing. So I feel pleased that it hasn't been just about personalities, but it's been about policies as well.
Can I just ask, Adam, it's Macca, you know, all those issues that you've spoken of, we are in a state of crisis with so many issues. How have we got to the point where we have so many crises? You know, how have we got to this point?
Well, so the way that I see it, I think we've got sort of three big crises. One is even before the corona crisis hit. One is what I call the inequality crisis, and that's because we've got inequality at 70-year highs in Australia, and the gap between the very wealthy and everyone else has never been bigger. And I think that's because we've had three decades of government saying, look, it's not government's role to help put in place the conditions that let you live a good life. Everything's up to you. We're going to throw all the basics of life over to the market, and it's sink or swim. And if you don't look after yourself, you can't afford a house, or you don't plan for your retirement, or you can't afford an education, then that's your fault. And that has led to a lot of people being left behind. And we've seen sort of, I guess, the kind of Margaret Thatcher-style policies being brought in here over three or four decades, and it's led to a lot of inequality. I think the second crisis that's related to the first one is what I call the jobs crisis. We've got nearly 4 in 10 young people at the moment either doesn't have a job or doesn't have enough hours of work. And in a wealthy country like Australia, I think that's just a national shame. And you could also be working full-time in Australia and still be living below the poverty line because the minimum wage has got so low. So we've got a lot of people who don't have enough work and who aren't earning enough money, and insecurity has sort of gone through the roof. And the third crisis is the climate crisis. And we've got there because, to answer your question, we've got there because over the last sort of 40 or 50 years, even though we've known about climate crisis since the 80s, if not the 80s or 90s at the absolute latest, we've continued to pollute. We've continued to use coal and gas, and it's led us to the point where we've now got 10 years or so to turn things around or we're going to be in real strife. And then on top of that has come the corona crisis that's really, I think, hit everyone, but it's hit some people much harder than others, and some sectors like arts and hospitality have really borne the brunt. So all of those things have sort of compounded on top of each other, and it's our job now to, I think, look at it with clear eyes to say, in a wealthy country like ours, we shouldn't be leaving people behind and we shouldn't be putting future generations at risk, and what do we do about it?
Look, I agree with you on so much of that, but Adam, is our politics broken? Is our politics broken?
I think a lot of people don't have faith in politics, and I think there's probably good reason in a sense, because what we've seen over many years is governments acting not in the public interest but acting for vested interests, and in particular in the interests of big donors. I think big money and big corporations play a disproportionate role in politics and are able to get governments to do things even when it works against the public interest. And as a result, people look at Canberra, look at Parliament and look at politics and think, well, it's all just being run for vested interests. I don't have any capacity to do anything about it. But what we found in, you know, going back to when I first got elected in Melbourne, the issue, once people know that they are actually powerful and that the things that they can do can actually make a difference and that they can change the direction of politics, then people start to feel empowered again and people start to feel hopeful. And I think it's that reconnection and that reminder to people that, no, look, actually your vote matters, you are powerful, you can make a big difference, that it's going to go some way to dealing with that very real trust deficit that you're identifying.
Adam, we're very keen, it's Tass here, we're very keen to talk about your new senator. But before we go on to that, and just to build on the series of crises that you've talked about, I wonder whether there might be a fourth crisis. Now, I'm not sure if this crisis is actually a real crisis or one that's being engineered, perhaps, by some of our social engineers, and it's the crisis around our cultures, and it seems to me that, you know, these things are this debate is actually raging, and all of a sudden we're finding people polarized, you know, sitting at different ends of policy issues and public policy issues. What are your thoughts about that?
Look, I think there's, I think we're always going to have differences of opinion. That's okay. Like, it's a democracy, and, you know, if we didn't have differences of opinion, people changing their minds about things, then governments never change, and you'd have a one-party state. So I'm less worried about that, but I'm more worried about these kind of, I guess, the politicising of things that shouldn't be politicised, like
yes.
climate change, for example. It's just, it's science. For example, that's right, and I'm also the second thing that does worry me is that to distract from those other crises that we're talking about, what happens is on the I think on the conservative right wing side of politics, they often like to start up culture wars to try and distract from those very real crises. So all of a sudden, instead of talking about how few people have a job or how many people are going homeless during the crisis, where they wage a campaign about statues, and we're talking about that. And so that, I think, that can, again, it makes people wonder what politics is all about, but also I think distracts from the real issues. But just on the issue of the multiple crises before we talk about Lydia, if I can,
yes.
I think coming back to the Green New Deal point, like if you go to the doctor and the doctor says, you've got three things wrong with you, I can give you a medicine that fixes all three, or I can give you a medicine that fixes one. You take the medicine that fixes all three. And what we've got to do at the moment, as we work out how to get out of these crises that we're in, I think we need to be pushing for plans that are going to address the multiplicity of the crises that we're facing. So,
is that medicine called Vote Green, is it?
Well, I think the medicine is called something like a Green New Deal. I would say, of course, I want people to vote green, but it's about saying we need a government-led plan of investment and action that's going to tackle those multiple crises. So, for example, instead of the granite benchtop grant that Scott Morrison is giving, which is going to help a few people deal with get renovate their house, and it's going to be people who've largely got money anyway, why not instead government invest to build more public housing? Mm. That's going to create more jobs and apprenticeships, but it's also going to put a roof over people's heads. So you tackle the homelessness crisis at the same time as you tackle the jobs crisis. Mm. Similarly, we could get the country running on 100% renewable energy. That's going to take a lot of work and a lot of jobs to build that up, and you start tackling the climate issue as well as the jobs issue. So we've got to look at policies, I think, that don't just address one thing that's wrong, but that tackle the multiple things that are wrong.
So talk to us about Lydia Thorpe.
I'm actually interested in the process, Adam. I'm only an observer of how senators are replaced in the Greens. What was the process, you know, to choose the replacement for Richard Di Natale? How did that work?
All of the members in Victoria voted, and there was multiple sort of town hall meetings that all happened online because of COVID, but there were multiple meetings where everyone could log on, hear from the candidates, and then every member in Victoria got an equal vote. And we had somewhere in the order of 65% of all of the members in Victoria turning out to vote. So it was a really participatory process, and people chose Lydia.
Now, we got a message here. There wasn't any branch stacking, I hope, from a listener.
It's pretty difficult to do that in the Greens, and there's I guess I would turn it around the other way and say one of the good things about being in the Greens in Victoria is you get to vote, and
yes.
A vote across the whole state is a pretty difficult thing. I think anyone would find it a pretty difficult thing to stack, but no, it was truly we have lots of rules in place to prevent that kind of thing from happening, and so it was individuals just responding to the merits of all of the candidates. And we had some great people sticking their name forward, and they voted.
Adam, one of our listeners called John says, as a Green supporter, I'm reading this out to you now, to quote, as a Green supporter, I'm disappointed about Lydia Thorpe's pre-selection. She's just too extreme. You need to bring people together, and she won't do that. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think it's exactly what Lydia's about. Lydia's been pushing for a treaty in Australia. I think we're the last Commonwealth country not to have a treaty between our First Nations peoples and the settlers. So, and basically her point, Lydia's whole argument, which I 100% agree with, is that in order for us to have true reconciliation in this country, we need to start with some truth-telling. And so we need to have a process, first of all, of acknowledging what settlement meant for Aboriginal people in this country and the violence and dispossession that took place there, and then a sort of a clear-eyed understanding of where things are now, and then you can come together and move forward with a treaty. And so she's pushing very hard to bring people together in the form of a treaty, and she's just saying part of it has to be that first step involves a bit of truth-telling. And look, that might be difficult and might be a bit confronting, but it's better than the alternative, because the alternative is just continuing to pretend it didn't happen, and that hurts.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Macca and Tass.
Adam, it's Tass here again. We're very interested in your reflections on the way in which the federal government, has actually managed the COVID pandemic. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I think the federal government, I think Scott Morrison had to be, there was a very slow start, and I think he really had to be dragged to having a health first position. I think you saw that with him saying, oh, look, I'm off to the football, don't worry about it, and acting as if everyone could go about their business. And then within, you know, less than 24 hours, those things were subject to restrictions and you couldn't do them. And I think he really didn't want to take a health-first approach, but I think he got dragged there. And after a slow start, I think the moves that the government had taken to protect people's health were generally good. And I think when you compare where Australia sits compared with other countries. I think you can see that. I think a big part of that was probably a lot of the state premiers dragging him to that position, as well as a number of public health advocates. I think the real concern I've got now is that there's a push to on from the federal level to start unwinding a lot of the distancing restrictions, perhaps earlier than is healthy. And I don't think anyone likes the restrictions. I don't think people like, you know, not being able to see their friends and their family and having to live under some form of lockdown. But I think if the alternative is to just say, oh, well, we've got to get business back to usual, even if it means more people contract the virus than otherwise might, then that's of concern to me.
Adam, I've already heard some of your thoughts on the Job Builder program. What about some of the other recovery programs in place? What about Job Keeper and Job Seeker? How do you think all that's panning out?
Look, I think people may remember we had a sitting of Parliament immediately after some of the first outbreaks, the first restrictions were put in place, and we called very strongly as the Greens for not only just some form of government assistance to business and workers to make sure things kept afloat and stayed afloat and didn't fall in a heap, but for there to be some conditions attached to it. So it wasn't just money given out in the form of a grant as the government was proposing, but in the form of job and wage guarantees. So we were pleased when the government took some steps to bring about JobKeeper. But what is really concerning, though, is that there's an ideological bent behind it, which is that there's so many people they're leaving out. And when you look at the failure to include casuals who work for less than 12 months or people that might have what I call lumpy income history, where if you work in the arts, for example, or in the entertainment sector, you might work on a project or a show for a particular couple of months, and that you do that in patches. And under the government's program, if you weren't employed on the magic date of 1st of March, you got nothing. And then universities really got the axe as well. So the government's approach has also been, I think, largely driven by their politics, which has been to support the people that they think that they need to support, and then everyone else, they've left them behind, and that's been cause for real concern.
I think the challenge for people, Adam, and you know, we're talking earlier when we started the show, you know, about a 30% of people in quarantine not being tested, people not engaging around the testing process that's going on in their suburbs. What would you do differently if you're in government in terms of, you know, can you pick something in terms of the COVID, the public health response that you would do differently?
I think there's been, I think going earlier and would have been important, but also I think in some of these areas, I don't know that the governments have done a good enough job of getting information out in languages other than English, and getting it out in ways that are appropriate to particular communities, not just sort of language diverse, but just getting it out in messages that are going to be understood. Because I think it's an intimidating thing to have someone coming and knocking on your door, wearing a mask, asking you to take a test or spit in the cup. And I think there's perhaps sometimes, I've heard some of the commentators say, oh, these people are refusing to be tested. And it's like, well, hang on, do people actually necessarily know what's going on and why someone's knocking at the door demanding them that they do something? And so I think we're probably playing a bit of catch-up in that respect. And I think everyone that I've spoken to, and Melbourne's a pretty diverse community, everyone that I've spoken to has been trying to do the right thing, and they just want to understand what the right thing actually is. And I think perhaps the government could have done a bit better in explaining to people what the right thing actually is.
Look, we're out of time, Adam, but I want to say we'd like yourself or one of your other federal colleagues, you know, we'd like to speak to someone from the Greens, you know, around once a month at least. If you can, our producer will liaise with your office to make sure that happens, because I think it's important, you know, that people get the opportunity to hear what you folk have got to say.
Yeah, look, I'd like that. Let's make it a regular thing. And like we're going, I mean, people forget, although Scott Morrison's riding high in the polls at the moment, actually we're only, you know, one or two backbench scandals away from another hung parliament, shared parliament again. And the coming into the next election, there's every chance that Greens together with some independents, we could have a rerun of 2010 where we have that shared power parliament at the next election. And so I think the more that people know about our role and can hold us to account and run the ruler over us in the same way as they can with the other parties, the better, I think.
Thank you so much, Adam. Great to have you on the airwaves. And we look forward to hearing people. We've had lots of positive feedback from a number of our listeners for you being so generous with your time this morning. But we look forward to having you on again regularly.
Appreciate it. Talk soon.
Excellent. Thank you. That was Adam Band, who's the federal member for Melbourne and the federal leader of the Greens Party.
A couple of messages here. Nice to hear from Adam Band and welcome back, Macca. This is from Melina. Thank you, Melina.
We always love hearing from Melina, Macca.
The major parties are now deeply damaged and tarnished, their brand with too many careerists and shady people. She says, I wonder if that person who thinks Lydia is extreme is a male, because I applaud any female, irrespective of politics, who enters politics in such a toxic environment. The best of luck. Don't know, Melina. The text messages are gender neutral usually. We don't know. Could be. What do you reckon, Tess?
Don't know, Macca. I've got no idea.
One here says, Macca, no more people from factions on your show either. Factions.
We've also had a message here.
What's that mean? Send me a follow-up, 317.
A message here from... who is it? It's Joe, actually. Joe says he's talking rubbish, all translated in 53 languages. This was on the Herald Sun. So this is clearly about COVID material and information to communities of multicultural backgrounds. That guy on TV said they don't let the virus control their lives. They just congregate in large groups and don't give a hoot. Plus, in their cultures, they all live in one house. Get your... Facts right.
Well, the facts are if you congregate in large groups, you're likely to contract the virus.
The rules are very clear. No more than 5 visitors to your
home. Sorry, Joe. I don't read the Herald Sun either.
No, neither do I, actually, Macca.
No.
It's painful to read, isn't it?
Thanks for sharing the thought. I saw a lot of people, you know, on various news shows saying that they didn't want to get tested, that they didn't feel the need to. And that's their right. But it's also our right to protect ourselves against getting infected. Mm. And my expectation is that if testing is in your suburb, you should do the right thing and be tested. And if you don't want to get tested, that's your right. But it's also, you know, a community's right to say if a community through its government wants to quarantine a particular area, they can and they will and they should.
Macca, 317's just being cheeky with you, they say, in a follow-up email. But Macca, I was going to ask you, what impact has the COVID-related restrictions had on you personally?
Look, I'm really conscious when I go, if I need to go out, I try and do knock over a number of different things at the same time. For example,
pick up the mail, get the milk and fill up the petrol?
That's right, because they're all within a close proximity. I have hand sanitizer in the car. I always use the hand sanitizer.
So have I, because you gave me a bottle of it.
When I go into the shop and come out of the shop, or the service station or whatever. So I minimize the movement. I minimize the movement and the engagement.
And are you feeling like you're spending a whole lot more time at home? Or is it about the same for you personally?
Me personally, it's about the same. Probably a little bit more because any meetings and things I have which have dropped off due to COVID, they tend to be on Zoom or whatever. So there's not as much actual engagement, one-on-one or in a small group, face-to-face. But no, for me, the change hasn't been that great, other than applying the diligence on the hygiene and the separation.
Interesting.
But other people, I know it's having a huge impact, huge impact.
Yeah, I'm spending more time at home. I have not spent this much time at home ever, really, to be quite frank. I used to hate spending time in traffic. I sort of miss it now.
Oh.
There's something nice about having a bit of time out to zone out, listen to your favourite tunes or your favourite podcast while you're stuck in traffic, heading off from one meeting to another.
Yeah.
I used to enjoy sitting on a tram going from place to place, and I only do that once a week now, and that's to come here.
Were you ever a people watcher, Tass? You know, watching all the, or observing all the different people in the tram?
Hello?
I don't know.
That's a question.
I'm just asking.
I'd say that's more a statement, Mac. I love people watching.
Yeah? Yeah. Why?
Oh, it's just interesting.
You're a perv, are you?
No, I just love people. You know, I'm a people person.
He's a people person.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.